a Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello, friends, and thank you for joining in again to A Jungian and a Witch. Today, we are going to talk about archetypes. What are archetypes? Where did this concept come from? How do we work with archetypes? Can we change our archetype? We're going to cover all of the baseline things that we need to know about archetypes as we go through this podcast. So I appreciate you tuning in. Again, if you have any questions, please feel free to email us at ajungianandawitch@gmail.com. Enjoy! All right, Dad. Well, thank you for joining me today. And we are going to talk about archetypes, something that I know you know a whole lot about.
Archetypes.
Archetypes. I thought I would start by reading just the definition of what an archetype is, and then we can dive into it.
The definition from the internet.
The Oxford. It's Oxford.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you.
So, I mean, that's at least something, right?
We'll see. Let's go.
So it says, a very typical example of a person or thing. And the example is, that book is a perfect archetype of the genre.
Absolutely wrong in every way.
That's what I was thought.
And
I thought you were
Oxford,
gonna say that.
No, people confuse archetype with stereotype.
Everything
Oxford just said is actually, that book is a stereotype of the genre. That would be absolutely correct. Archetype, no, completely wrong.
It's so, and the second one is an original that has been imitated. Mm-hmm. It says the archetype of faith is Abraham. And I was like, what?
No, the stereotype of faith
is Abraham. Okay.
Wrong.
That's so I want to dive in here. Then my first question is then, what is an archetype?
Yes. And I know people are very confused, although all of this and maybe some things we talked about last week have to do with the absorption of Jung's ideas in the culture.
Yeah.
So in a way that's helpful, for me, it's nice to see it absorbed in the culture. But by definition, when that absorption happens, it gets away from the original idea.
Yeah, it gets warped and manipulated.
It does. Even Oxford, apparently, which is sad. Okay, so archetype is a Greek word. And the original word is very helpful because that's actually what it means, is the Greek. Mm. So it's a combination of two words, arche and tupos.
Oh, okay.
So arche, I mean, you may have heard before with various other kind of Greek words, arche means the first, the primal, the original.
Okay.
Arche.
Okay.
Tupe is, when you think about it, that's where we get our word type, tupe, type, comes into English, but tupe, like, that's why a typewriter is a tupe, means an imprint, a strike, a thing hitting a thing.
Interesting.
That's what tupe means. So that's why a typewriter is about, you know, well, you guys don't even know what typewriters are because you don't use them, but you press the letter and it strikes the paper. And that's tupe.
Mm-hmm.
So archetupe, archetype, is the original imprint.
The original imprint.
In Greek.
Okay.
as I said before, Jung does not invent that word. It's a Greek word that is used in Plato.
And okay, maybe Plato.
Maybe people have heard of, you know, Plato had this idea of the original forms. That's the whole thing with the shadow in the cave, right? In Plato, that all we can see are the shadows on the in the cave. We can never see the archetype, archetype, the original imprint. We're seeing the representation of it in a shadow, in that metaphor, but we're not seeing the original thing, and we can't see it.
Okay. So I think you're going to have to rewind for people a little bit about what the forms are.
Okay. So then Jung takes that.
Okay.
2,500 years later. Oh, I'm using the year 2000. Okay. 2,400 years later. To say that the pattern, the form of many things is consistent across cultures and across history. Of which the most famous example, let's say Joseph Campbell talks about the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Okay. And that when you look, you can see the hero's journey in the Gilgamesh, which is way back. That's right. That's like 3,200 BCE. You can see the hero's journey in many other stories. And then famously from Joseph Campbell, George Lucas takes the myth of the hero's journey and creates Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Yeah. Of which the entire arc of the original three movies.
Oh, okay.
Luke is the hero, and the things that happen to him are all aspects of the hero's journey. The archetype of the hero's journey.
Okay.
And he makes a movie out of that because he's going back to the, again, here's the arche, the original.
The original, yeah.
Form, the pattern. So the pattern that is followed, even though it happens in specific cultural ways in different cultures, but the pattern is still the same.
So George Lucas really read that book, and then
he read
The Hero's Journey.
He read, well, the Joseph Campbell book is The Hero of a Thousand Faces.
Oh,
and that's the archetype part. The thousand faces, like it's all over everywhere, but behind it is a form, and they all follow the form, more or less. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joseph Campbell has like 17 stages of the hero's journey, and each story gets whatever 10 of the 17 or something.
Okay,
that's an archetype, and there are many archetypes.
Do all the archetypes have those stages?
No.
Okay. Well,
they have a common form. And again, that's being very Platonic. I mean, that's what Plato is saying. Behind the shadow, always the two-dimensional representation, there is an original form.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. That's one reason why it's so complicated and people misunderstand it.
Yeah, well, the original form thing
is that Luke Skywalker is not an archetype.
Okay.
Exactly. Luke Skywalker is based,
a hero.
Based on an archetype. Yeah,
based on the hero archetype.
And the original, the arche form, we can never see. So this is interesting insofar as I know that you had chemistry as a part of a bio major, chem one, chem two, and organic chemistry and organic.
Yes, I did.
So you probably know how crystals are formed.
Well, so yeah.
What is the crystalline lattice? L-A-T-T-I-C-E.
Lattice. I mean, isn't it carbon?
Yes.
It's a square.
Where is it? It isn't anywhere. It is the form behind crystals.
Okay.
That the molecules have
will only arrange in a certain
in
position.
In a certain pattern.
Based on the chemicals that are in,
Based on the pattern. But you can never see the crystalline lattice. All you see are formed crystals. And by definition, when it's a formed crystal, it is not the lattice, which is the pattern behind all crystals or whatever. I think in crystals, there are 12 different lattices that make the different crystals.
Yeah.
But see? So
So that's a lot to think about.
And that is actually the metaphor that Jung used, is that the way to think about archetypes is to think about the crystalline
structures,
lattice. But if you're not a bio major or
it's hard to
doctor like Jung, that you don't even know, or you don't know chemistry, like you don't know what he's talking about. But it's the idea that there is this underlying pattern,
and that's why we get things like bismuth and pyrite that are all square, and then quartz that's terminated, and that's where all of those come from.
That's where all from the crystalline lattice.
From
the
lattice.
When you see but all you can see is a particular crystal.
Yes, exactly.
You can't see the arche crystal.
Yeah.
Because it is before it coagulates. Right? It's prior, arche, before it coagulates. So an example that I use is a snowflake, which is a crystal.
It is.
A snowflake
crystal
is a crystal. The old saying, you know, that no two snowflakes are alike, which is true.
Yeah.
Because they crystallize in a particular environment, in a particular way, with all kinds of variables. You can't see the crystalline lattice behind a snowflake, but you can see a snowflake, but it's already crystallized. So that's why when you think about archetypes, it's like you could say there's no such thing as a snowflake.
Right. Okay.
All we see are crystallized snowflakes.
There's an archetype of a snowflake.
Behind is the archetype, but you can't see it. What you see, and I tell people, you know, that you have to say there's a Russian snowflake and an Alaskan snowflake, right? And a Norwegian snowflake, because they're crystallizing in a particular environment. And that's all we have to put our hands on. And so in mythology, back to Joseph Campbell and back to Jung, it's the same thing. Every archetype expresses itself when it crystallizes in a particular milieu.
That makes sense.
Cultural milieu, so it takes on the elements of that culture in which it is crystallizing. And also in dreams, we would say, it takes on the personal milieu that it crystallizes in the environment of your personal psyche.
Well, yeah.
So that when you, last week we talked about the shadow, when you have a dream about a shadow figure.
Yeah.
Which is an archetype, the shadow.
The shadow, yeah.
Your shadow crystallization of the archetype would be different than another woman.
Well, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. They're all individual.
Because you are different than that woman, or your environment and your cultural milieu is shaped, and that shapes the crystallization of the archetype into something particular.
Okay.
Right? Okay. The shadow figure woman for you in a dream. So the shadow is an archetype, but the woman in your dream is a snowflake, a specific, crystallized thing. You can generalize and then get an impression of, well, what is the pattern behind all of these dreams? What is the pattern behind all of these myths?
Right.
And you can kind of only speculate because you can't see it.
Okay.
But then you say, well, I have seen 10,000 dreams, and
yeah.
This is a typical pattern in the way the shadow crystallizes.
Okay. But then, so we also take things, so there's like the archetype of the, like the mother, right? Let's say
the mother, and there's, same.
So there's, thing. But there, I'm just thinking about what there might be like the most of on the planet, right? Like the mother and the father archetypes.
Sure, sure.
Because there's so many different ways that it crystallizes that it just seems like.
But there is an underlying pattern.
Yeah.
An arche behind it all. So yes, the archetypal mother and the archetypal father are what children deal with.
Oh, okay.
Because they don't experience
the child perspective.
They don't experience their mother as a person.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
They have no idea their mother is a person. Their mother is mother. That's
yes.
All.
There's
no person there because the child is dealing with the archetype of mother, except that again, it's a snowflake. It's like, in each particular mother, the archetype is crystallized in a unique and specific way.
Mm-hmm. That are each individual.
So let's say that we have an overwhelmed mother.
Okay.
Have you heard that term before?
Overwhelmed mother? Yeah, definitely.
Well, no, have you heard the term? Overwhelmed mother. That's a term that therapists use.
That therapists use. Okay.
Oh, well, because so many mothers are overwhelmed.
Sure.
Because this is hard and life is overwhelming sometimes.
It is. It really is.
Is that an archetype, the overwhelmed mother? And the answer is no.
It's a subset, right?
It is. No, it's a personal thing. It is not.
So it has nothing to do with the archetype itself. It's just.
The circumstances of the mother, the person of the mother.
Yeah.
And so in that way, that mother is not fulfilling the archetype of mother. Because she's overwhelmed. Mm. The child is looking for the archetype.
Yeah.
And the overwhelmedness of the mother, you know, when she can't deal, when she can't cope, when she has different things, like she can't get out of bed or all the things that happen, the child is confused.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it is not conforming to the pattern.
Right.
Okay. It is outside the pattern.
Oh, okay.
So what happens?
Yes.
The child continues to look for and long for the archetypal mother.
Okay.
And when the personal mother, who is not an archetype, she's a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Does not fit the pattern, then the child will look for other women who do fit the pattern.
Okay. I can see how that would happen with a lot of things.
Will create an inner mental image of the archetypal mother.
Okay. How does that express itself?
In dreams, fantasies, and play. The child in the play, the play of a child, the way a child is playing, you will see the archetypal mother that is missing in the actual mother.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I feel like I saw that a lot in the before and after school program that I worked for.
Oh.
Because they always wanted to play. I mean, the two top things that the kids would play were principal in school, because the kids wanted to act out the role of the principal, and family. There's a mom. I'm the mom. You're the dad. Okay, you're the kid. And they would act out the roles.
Yeah.
And I always just thought it was fun, particularly with the principal one, about like, you guys just got out of school. Do we really want to play school right now? And Oh, yeah. That's what they wanted to do, because they wanted to be the teacher. They wanted to be the principal. They wanted to act out these roles. They didn't have a chance to do
Which
that.
Might be archetypes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That and the right? mom, being the mom and being the dad. Those were the biggest ones.
Right. But I'm saying the teacher.
The teacher archetype, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the principal is just another teacher, right?
The principal's different.
More authority.
Yeah. So it is interesting that you can see archetypes all over the place in children, in dreams, and, you know, much less adults, because let's say in therapy, you had this issue of a woman who comes to therapy and her personal mother did not conform to the pattern. So her whole life, she's been longing for the perfect mother.
Yeah. Okay.
Which does not exist because the archetype.
Right.
But she's constantly trying to find it in an actual human being woman.
That's tough.
And that's tough because she doesn't know the difference between the archetypal mother and the personal mother.
Okay.
And so maybe that's therapeutic, that if you learn, oh, okay, my mother had XYZ faults.
Yeah.
Because she's a human being.
Right. And, we all have faults.
And a human being cannot be an archetype.
So that was going to be my question. Yeah. So that there's never, none of us are ever an archetype.
Right. So let's say that you grew up in a culture that says a person should look for their soulmate.
Okay. Soulmate. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. Their twin flame is the other thing people call it.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's an archetype.
The lovers, like the two people finding each other.
Are you ever going to find your soulmate? And the answer is no, of course you're not. You can't, because a human being is not an archetype and can never be an archetype.
Okay.
A human being is a human being and they don't fit the pattern. The archetypal.
Not perfectly.
The archetypal lover, here's another archetype in Jung. For a woman, it would be the archetype of man is called the animus. And in a man, the archetype of a woman is called anima.
Okay.
Which are Latin words. So for the word soul.
Oh.
That's where soulmate comes from. Anima. Animus. Ooh. The anima is the feminine form in Latin. Animus is the masculine form.
Okay.
So yes, there is a pattern inside each and every one of us. That is the archetypal image of a woman, the archetypal image of a man.
Okay.
And by definition, that's what we're looking for, is the archetype. Right? Because let's say evolutionary biology.
Okay.
Well, a woman is totally conditioned by evolution to look for certain qualities in a man for reproduction.
Okay.
That's a pattern.
That's a pattern, sure.
What is a woman looking for in a man evolutionary-wise, which is verging on the archetype, and that is, she's looking for a man who stays around.
Okay. Yeah.
And then a woman experiences that as a man who says all the right things about staying around. And that you are the one and only. That's what staying around means. You are the one and only.
Okay.
That's the archetype at play.
So very like Romeo and Juliet type stuff.
Well, no, it's more like a robin in the nest.
A robin in the nest?
Yes, the mother robin is looking for a lover.
Oh, I mean, you're talking more animalistic type.
Well, which is evolution, though.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
If she has eggs and the male flies away and never comes back.
Yeah.
She has to do it all herself.
True.
And that means she cannot guard the eggs and go look for food at the same time.
Okay. So probability of the young dying gets her.
It's a dangerous situation, and evolution fixes that by giving her an inclination to choose among the various males the one who will be there when it counts.
Okay.
Right?
Right. Okay.
That's all archetypal, if you see what I mean. That's the pattern.
Okay.
An actual human being, man, is not an archetype. And
right.
Has these everybody has issues. Let's put it that way.
That's definitely true.
And that's not the archetype.
But that's okay.
But it's the archetype that helps her survive if she follows her instinct. Like, it's not conscious. It's not an ego thing. No archetypes are ego conscious things. They exist. And this is where, to really talk about our archetypes, you have to bring in this other concept.
Oh, okay.
Jung said that we actually have at least two unconsciouses, not one.
Whoa, okay.
So he had the idea of the personal unconscious, which when people talk about the unconscious, most of the time is in 99% of the time, unless you're a Jungian.
Okay.
They're talking about the personal, what Jung would call the personal unconscious. Or in other terms, we call that the Freudian unconscious, which, because Freud was the first to find out all these personal characteristics, which is essentially your personal history.
Yeah. The things that make you you.
Yeah. Well, that make you the ego you.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So trauma, that's in the personal unconscious. You know, you're a person who had trauma of a certain kind at a certain age.
Yes.
Other people did not have that trauma at that age, or they had it at a different age, or they didn't have that trauma. And that's the difference between their personal history and your personal history. But that's all in the personal unconscious.
Okay.
Because it is in sort of nature versus nurture, that would be the nurture part, the personal unconscious. The things that happened to you personally and then affected you, that's your personal unconscious.
Okay. What's the other one?
Jung was among the first to use this idea that originally he called the collective unconscious.
Okay. That's what I thought you were going to say. All right.
Right.
The collective unconscious, which is something that gets talked about a lot.
And that is the aspect of, at first, instinctual, evolutionary, and then deeper, that is the unconscious forms or patterns. Here we go, back to the archetypes.
Yeah.
That are a part of every single human being. They're not personal.
Yeah.
Whether, again, you live in Russia or Finland or Alaska, you still have a common collective unconscious.
Okay.
And the archetypes are the primary expression of the collective unconscious.
Right. Okay.
So that's important to know about our archetypes is, by definition, they are not personal. Okay. For instance, I mean, and this actually happens, that you can dream of a figure from the collective unconscious, an archetypal figure.
That makes sense, yeah.
All independently, without knowing anything about anything, that you've never come across this, you don't know the word for it, you've never seen it in your culture, and yet it comes out in your dream as a thing that actually you are aware of, even though you don't know it.
Yeah, that's definitely happened to me.
Oh, for me, I very, very long time ago, I had a dream of a burning circle in space with many lines all connecting and forming this beautiful pattern.
Okay.
I was 19 years old, I can guarantee you I had never, ever read anything about a mandala.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
That word didn't exist for me.
Right. From West Virginia, you didn't know anything about that.
Mandala is a Sanskrit word, FYI.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't read anything about mandalas. But
it just appeared to you.
I dreamed of a perfect mandala.
Wow.
And it was only many years / decades later that as I began to study and learned about mandalas that I would like, oh, that's what it was. That's what it was. And
wow.
See, that's the collective unconscious, right? That's the archetype. The archetype of the mandala. See, there's another archetype, the mandala. And the answer is pretty much everybody dreams of mandalas at some point.
Really?
Sure. Huh. Because the image, the pattern, a mandala is a pattern.
Yes.
Either it can be circular, it can be square.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a universal pattern.
Yeah.
Jung associated that with the archetype of the self. So there's another archetype, right? The archetype of the self, which again is a universal pattern that exists in every single person in every single culture.
Because we all are ourselves.
Because we all spring out of the collective unconscious. It is before the personal, an infant has the collective unconscious.
I would
say prenatal.
Oh, really?
Has a collective unconscious.
Yeah.
That's what this concept is.
Mm.
It is beyond things all personal.
Interesting.
It is the inheritance of being a human being to have
a
human collective unconscious. Now, and then there's some, like, think about, well, does a bird have a collective unconscious? Does a bee have a collective unconscious?
Well,
and you would have to say, insofar as other animals, which is virtually all animals, react and function out of instinct.
Yes.
How do they know how to do that?
How do the geese know to fly south for the winter?
How do they know that? And the answer is that's the evolutionary part of the collective unconscious. That's how they know.
Wow.
So, for instance, you know, I have two cats.
Yep.
And they were very little when we got them. Not as young as your cat, but
no.
I know for a fact that my two cats never learned various things from other cats before they came.
Okay.
And since they came here, they've never seen another cat.
True.
So it's not learned behavior.
Right, right. It's instinctual.
It's instinctual. And yet they have hunting behavior.
They do.
Of course they do. They are territorial.
Yeah.
They are very territorial. And they act like a feline.
Yes, the feline archetype, right?
Yes. The feline instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So it's close.
Interesting. And so then when Gus, your cat Gus, acts like a dog, and then we say he's not being the archetype of the cat, he's being the archetype of a dog.
No, he's not being the archetype of a dog. That's his personal unconscious.
Oh, okay.
Because in his personal experience,
he had more experience with dogs.
He learned things.
Yeah, okay.
Personally. Okay. But another cat who didn't have, see, nature versus nurture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That he learned, yes, he can learn things, and you and I can learn things. That's in the personal unconscious.
Okay. Okay.
Instinct is not learned.
Right. Okay.
It is the pattern, the arche, that is there from the beginning and universal for everybody of our species. And that's what an archetype is.
Hmm. So my question, another one of my questions is, do we know about our archetypes? Can we change our archetype? Can we actively work with them? Or is it something that we are inherently unaware of?
Well, back a little bit to our original discussion of the shadow. I mean, by definition, we're inherently unaware of them when we start.
When we start, though.
When we start.
Okay.
We are inherently unaware of everything.
Well, yeah.
Like a child.
Like a baby, yeah.
And then is it possible to become aware of archetypes in our own lives, or the way mm-hmm. in which the archetypes, the unseen pattern is playing out? The pattern is playing out. Not the okay. their personal patterns too. When it's a personal pattern, that's called a complex.
Right. Okay.
You have a complex.
Yeah. Yes,
you have a complex, and it is a pattern of doing things, behavior in a certain way.
Okay.
But it's personal. Archetype is impersonal.
Okay.
Beyond your personal experience. And the answer is yes, of course, it's possible to become aware of the archetypes that are moving in your own life.
And then from there, can we try and change our path, or is it more set in stone?
That's a very deep question.
Can you embody?
I think the answer would be some people would say there is some possibility of change of archetypal patterns, and other people say no, there's not a possibility of change of archetypal okay. patterns. Because again, 99% of people, when they talk about their patterns and their behavior and the patterns they're in, they're talking mm-hmm. about the personal unconscious. They're not talking about archetypes.
Okay.
It's like, well, I want to change this pattern, which is a complex.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's like, yes. Okay, I have trauma, and then I'm having all these trauma reactions and trauma behavior, and it's getting me in trouble time and time again, and I want to change that. Mm. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Because that's in the personal unconscious.
Okay.
Yes, you can change that.
But what about, like, if someone, like, let's just say, like, you said I was in the archetype of the witch the other day.
Yes.
Is that something that I can actively, like, seek out and choose to emulate and, like, go down that path? Or is it something that's inherent in us beforehand?
I would say that if you're able to embody witchness.
Yes.
Which is the pattern of witchness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's because that's in you.
Because it was already in us from yes. the beginning. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And that something about your self, which is back to the archetype of the self.
Mm-hmm.
is invested in that archetype.
Okay.
Which is a little like astrology.
Yeah, okay.
You'd have to explain that to me, but again, astrology is about archetypal patterns.
Yes.
A Gemini is like a Gemini. A Cancer
exactly.
is like a Cancer. The pattern. Mm.
The pattern.
And
yeah.
It's impersonal.
And
it's
inherent.
Not
you, yeah.
And inherent. And you cannot not be a Gemini.
Right. Exactly.
Right? Like, no matter how hard you try, you were born a Gemini and you will be a Gemini. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, and that's fine. That's okay. Embrace it. Accept it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little prejudiced since I'm a Gemini and I think
well,
it's
right.
wonderful to be a Gemini. but apparently other people find Geminis frustrating.
Yep.
But that's a different story. But that's the archetype. See what I mean?
I see. Yeah.
And so the witch archetype, yeah, the witch is an archetype. And that's why. So one thing is to talk about the pattern as kind of a concept of the pattern of witch.
True.
But the pattern carries over into the representations. So that would be the pictures of witch, the art of witches, to how it is shown in.
Okay.
So the myth is not only an intellectual concept, It is also in the representation itself. It's like, this is what a witch, quote, looks like. And it's trying to capture the archetype.
Mm-hmm.
And so
can the archetype change over time, though, with the collective unconscious? Well, so, like, yes, the witch back in the day was going to get you burned, and now today.
All right. It's changed. Yes, good. You're bringing up another aspect of archetype that I left out. Yes.
Mm, okay.
So, you're back to the crystalline lattice and the snowflake. Yes.
Okay.
The pattern is inherent and theoretically unchanging. Over millennia of time. Okay. There may be some change over millennia, but it's over a period of at least 2,000 years. Back to when we talked about Age of Aquarius, things like that. That it might change over a very, very, very long period of time. But the representation changes based on the culture.
Right. Okay.
And the culture changes.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so the representation changes. So that's why when Jung talks about, he says you have to make this difference. There are archetypal images and then the archetype.
Right. Right. So
that's
they're different.
Very important distinction that you can never see the archetype because it's the arche behind the form pattern behind all things. But what we see are archetypal images. So what you would say is, yes, the archetypal image of the witch
image has changed over time.
Has changed over time as the culture changed.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Because the snowflake crystallizes in a particular environment at a particular time, and it takes on the qualities in which it's crystallizing.
Interesting.
So, yes, the archetypal image of a witch changes. But the archetype does not change. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Because, I mean, you think about it. How is a witch, because witches are universal. It's an archetype.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
What is the representation of a witch in China? What is representation of a witch in Japan? What is the representation of a witch in Africa? What is the representation of a witch in India? What is the representation of a witch in Western culture?
Yeah, and it's going to be different.
It's going to be different, but it still has a pattern.
Right.
That you could tell from the pattern that a Chinese witch, that's actually has a similarity to a Western witch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all follow the pattern. That makes sense.
To some extent, you know, like we said, no one representation is able to capture every single aspect, like the 17 stages of the hero's journey. But they get, it's certainly more than half, and you know, something like that.
Okay.
So does that help the idea of the archetypal image of a witch does change
versus the actual
arc,
which the word arc keeps reminding me of the word archangel.
Same thing.
Archangel is the same thing.
The primary form, the arche, the original.
Makes a lot more sense. And that's what
arche. And because it's the first, you know, the original, it also carries a little bit the sense of the most important. So that's a little bit, that aspect of RK is in archangel, is in the most important.
Most important,
but it really means the original, the primary. Original. Yes.
It makes a lot of sense now.
That's the same word.
Right. Yeah, that's the only other, when you were saying that we've heard it before, that was what came to mind. Okay, so my next question is about, so Jung has 12, I believe, archetypes, but we've talked about a lot of different ones, and I know that we see a lot of examples out there on TikTok, Instagram about, oh, this archetype, that archetype, and I know in tarot we talk about the Fool's Journey and that there's 22 archetypes, so are there really a finite amount, or is it sort of loose? How do we define what is an archetype?
Very good. So I would say we're back to the false equivalence of the stereotype and the archetype.
Okay.
A stereotype is a cultural form. And an archetype is not that at all, period.
Right.
An archetype is, again, inherent, universal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's, I'm going to call it the internet reductionism.
Okay.
For people to say that Jung had 12 archetypes, that, I mean, that's crazy in a way. It's like people are trying to find, well, these are the 12 most popular archetypes. I mean, something like that. But no, okay. It's not 12 archetypes. There's no way to know how many archetypes there are, how many forms,
okay.
Because it has to do with the forms we are conscious of. How do we count the forms we are not conscious of?
Well, that's an impossible question, right?
It is an impossible question. So, for instance, have you heard of a fractal?
Yeah.
You know what a fractal is in math and so forth?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's an archetype.
Because it has a pattern?
It has a pattern, and it's inherent, and it's universal.
That's a math. Put those together.
There
That's
are
fun.
Archetypes in math, of course there are. So, for instance, I believe today is called Pi Day.
Oh, yeah, it is.
So, what is Pi? It is a pattern that is inherent
in all circles
and universal.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are archetypes in math. There are archetypes in myth.
Mm-hmm.
And how many? Like, many, 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 many. Yes. So that's archetype too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we are going to definitely talk more about tarot at some point and the archetypes that we see in tarot. But I think this is a really good base for archetypes. Do you have any other things just for this baseline we're getting for archetypes that you think is important for us to know?
I think just one last thing quickly would be that the relationship between human beings and archetypes.
Oh, yeah, that is a good question.
And that Jung considered that very dangerous. Because
dangerous
because, remember, as we talked about Jung before, back in Bearcoultsley, the mental hospital with all the schizophrenics and bipolars and other people, that when you are psychotic, what is happening in the psychotic fantasy is archetypes. And when your ego disintegrates, now there's no person, you in psychosis identify with archetype, like the people
with
in the
specific archetype. Or?
Sure, yes, like the people. The classic example of people in the mental hospital who say, "I am Jesus Christ."
Oh, I see what
or,
you mean.
Or I am Napoleon. I mean, there are many typical identifications. That is when the ego has dissolved into the archetype. And that is dangerous and destructive and sort of the basic, it's one of the aspects of the myth of Icarus, who flew too close to the sun.
Yeah.
And his wings melted and he fell into the sea and perished. So you would say he was identifying with the archetype of the sun. He lost himself. He lost himself and perished. So the whole thing is that we have to keep straight about archetypes in human beings. It's like, I am a human being.
So
I have a human life to live.
Yeah.
I am not an archetype.
So when people get over-identified with an archetype.
Yes. And that also, and my mother is not an archetype, and my father is not an archetype, and my lover is not an archetype.
Right, we grow
They're
out
not
of
archetypes
that.
Archetypes, because it's projection. Mm-hmm. Projection of the archetype onto a person. And in the long run, it breaks because the person is not living up to the archetype.
Yeah, they're bound to fail.
Well, they're bound to become more human the more you get to know them. And
oh, well,
that's
yeah.
not a failure. That's just the withdrawing of the projection. And a real relationship is between two human beings. Not between two archetypes.
It's interesting.
We have to keep this straight about what is an archetype and what is a human being, and they're not the same.
Yeah.
And not to identify with the archetype as a human, as a person.
Yeah, that makes sense. I saw this meme that was a clip from an old Batman cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's the Joker and one of his people pull the mask off of Batman, and he goes, "Why did you do that? That makes it's not fun anymore."
Exactly.
Because he's not the archetype anymore. He's
not
a human being.
And see,
so that just makes perfect sense.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's it. Well, awesome, Dad. I think that about wraps up my questions. It gives us a really awesome baseline for archetypes, which I know will come up, I'm sure, a lot as we go through this podcast and come up with a bunch of different topics. Thanks again. I appreciate you coming out and talking to us, and be back next week with another topic that I haven't decided yet.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. It's fun.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with my dad. If you have any questions at all, please feel free to email us at ajungianandawitch@gmail.com. If you want to find out more about me, Molly, go to www.queenofcupsapothecary.com. If you want to find out more about my dad, go to History of Ideas on YouTube. I just want to do a quick little shout out. If you haven't already heard, we will have an eclipse going across the United States on April 8th, and I'm throwing an eclipse party. I will be at Granite Coast Brewery that Monday between 1 and 5. We are going to have a lecture on the science and the spirituality of eclipses, and then we're going to do a really awesome releasing ceremony right before the eclipse. Every guest will get a pair of eclipse glasses so that we can watch the eclipse safely together. So I hope you can join. Head over to the experiences section of my website for more info and to grab your tickets today. Next week, we're going to talk about symbols and what they mean, how they show up in our lives, how we can work with them. We're going to get a really good baseline so that we can have this knowledge going forward through our podcast. So thanks again for tuning in to A Jungian and a Witch. I appreciate each and every one of you. We'll see you next time.